Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
And a good Thursday afternoon, everybody. Hello.
We survived the storms last night.
There is nothing better than sleeping on a stormy, rainy night.
Oh, man. I slept straight through it, but I knew how hard it had rained because, you know, we park underneath a radio tower. There was a lot of fresh paint, we'll call it, on my truck.
You mean target practice, yeah. Bird target
and
practice.
When I woke up this morning, there was no longer any fresh paint on my truck. That's how hard it rained.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
I know. To get rid of all of it, that's pretty impressive.
Wow. There have been nights where my car's been painted so badly, I have had to go straight to the car wash because I am embarrassed. There's a car wash right around the corner here. I am embarrassed to drive my car around this city because it is literally covered in bird poop.
And there is not a safe spot in the lot. They will find you.
They will.
You take that personally?
I feel judged on the way home. Yeah. If I've got a lot of bird poop on the car. Yeah. And so I head over here to the car wash and just drive right through.
Take care of business.
Mm-hmm. So well, the birds did. I guess I should.
It's become a beautiful day.
What is the update out of Florida State, please?
We are awaiting a live news conference after a mass shooting at one of our great, gigantic state universities in the United States. That is Florida State. Tallahassee, I believe. Isn't that where Florida State is located? Six hurt suspect is in custody, and the police presence, as you can imagine,
heavy.
My God. What is it about the spring? We were talking about this out in the newsroom.
I don't know.
The spring, and specifically the month of April.
Well, there was a shooting at the high school in Texas. What was that, on Tuesday? I believe that was on Tuesday.
Yesterday.
Was it yesterday? And then today at Florida State University.
Yep.
We will wait and see when that starts and some of the information that comes from that. We haven't quite decided if we're going to take that live, but we will monitor and let you know.
Scientists have detected unique chemical patterns similar to those produced by Earth's algae and seaweed, raising the possibility of the presence of a warm ocean, perhaps teeming with life, on a planet 7 trillion miles away.
How do they know?
Because they're smarter than us?
Math and such.
Math is hard. The signs were found on K2-18b, an exoplanet orbiting a red dwarf star twice the size of Earth and 124 light years away, according to a team of researchers at Cambridge University.
Yeah, they said that
go ahead.
They said that it was covered in some algae that is only created by large bodies of water, similar to an ocean. The entire planet was covered with it, and that's what makes them think that maybe this is a early stage Earth. You know, we had ice ages, massive fires, different eras of Earth. How do they know that, though? I'm with Dana. How do you know that that's algae? You're looking at it. Oh, that's green.
Well, they're looking at patterns.
Well, that there is algae that only is created by oceans.
No. Oh, my God. What they're seeing is patterns in the atmosphere that are conducive to what you would see on Earth because of things, chemicals that are released from algae and seaweed.
And math and such.
Mm-hmm. And we've lost data.
I know you love
I love this
extraterrestrial things.
I love
physics, yeah.
Very important in life, Sam. When you're moving from point A to point B.
That's not physics.
How safe is your private medical data? And I think, Scott, I found this story last night. It's one of the things we're going to talk about on the program today. This has happened before where you get, you know, like a data breach email and they're like, we're going to give you free credit monitoring for a year. Click on this. You know, this happens.
Yeah.
So I feel like we feel safer when it comes to your private health information. I think HIPAA is one of the most misunderstood forms that we all sign. But when it comes to your private medical health care information, I feel much more safe with that information than I do with my password to a bank card, quite frankly.
Okay.
Because those are usually the breaches we hear about. Until now.
A class action lawsuit has been filed alleging a physical therapist unlawfully accessed photos and sensitive information of more than 400 patients at the University of Kansas Health System. Two unnamed patients accusing the University of Kansas Health System, along with Lawrence Memorial, of several violations, claiming a physical therapist targeted women who had undergone breast augmentation and other surgeries, breaching the privacy of at least 425 people.
425. These are going to be mostly women. The other party named in this lawsuit is Epic Systems Corporation, who has epically stepped in it. And one of the things I want to ask our healthcare providers, and you can call in and be anonymous, is how would a physical therapist, as important as that job is for so many people.
But you're not a doctor.
How is it that a physical therapist is able to go into some hospital system and view and download hundreds of photographs of women in various stages of undress?
The physical therapist never provided treatment to the women.
Of course not.
Never had an affiliation with Lawrence Memorial or its plastic surgery clinic.
So how does this happen? Because read that again. The employee, I assume a male, was able to log on, gain access to Epic's electronic medical records system, and get access to the patients. And in fact, one of the women says the physical therapist specifically searched her name, quote, typed in by keystroke.
How does she know that?
And was able to view nude photographs and body measurements along with her name, address, date of birth, driver's license, clinical notes, and other personal information.
They can go back and see exactly what was done in the time frame when his account was logged in and accessing that data. This is an issue with the portal system that they are using.
Bingo.
You had mentioned a name of one of them. I'm not sure what that name was. I don't remember. But effectively, and yes, Scott, physical therapists, if they have a doctorate, are doctors.
And they are doctors.
Yes. And okay. In many cases,
I stand corrected.
In many cases, they do need access to health records. They need to know what concerns are there with this client. First of all, why are they even here? You can't get all of that from a upfront physical assessment. Sometimes you need to dig a little bit deeper, surgeries, things like that. This portal should have given him access to his patient.
Okay.
Not every patient.
Can I ask a question real quick? And it might be a little
uncomfortable. Because if I know about anything, it's plastic surgery. Okay. And I'm telling you, Sam, there is no reason a physical therapist needs your breast augmentation. There's just zero reason that would happen.
Okay, that's where I'm going to go. I have dated, post-divorce from Shonda, a handful of women who have had breast augmentation.
Yes.
And I have seen the before and after photographs.
They're not titillating, if that's what you're asking, they are not.
That's not where I was going. Why is it that they take a picture of the before photograph augmentation and then a post-augmentation photograph?
Well, part of it is to, when they're in the surgical bay, see visually before, visually maybe something that you want to look like after, and then also to see your progress between the before and the after documentation. Well, I don't have an issue with the photographs.
But why do you need to take a post-augmentation photograph?
Don't they mark up your body? I'll tell you, when one of my photographs was taken, they had me remove my necklace because that would be considered an identifiable
marker.
You know, and it didn't say Dana on my necklace, but it could. A lot of women wear their names on their necklace.
But again, I don't think I've gotten an answer. Why do we need a post-augmentation photograph?
I think all surgeries are before and after photographs.
I've had surgeries before. They don't do post.
Well, this is plastic surgery, and you are changing the visual and physical, but the visual aspect of a part of the body. Mm-hmm. And so through the process, here's the before, here's the after.
Yeah. There are also...
So you can,
Scott,
reference
You can also... Patients can then, through their provider, look at similar sized women and see the result when you're going through the process to figure out what you would like to look like.
Okay, but that makes sense. But that could be done on a voluntary basis.
Yeah, it could be, but I think we're getting off track of how in the hell does a physical therapist even have access to this database?
I understand. I just want to finish the point by saying I too have had plastic surgery on my face. They never did after two nose jobs and a Z-plasty surgery.
Really?
Nobody ever came in and took a photograph of my face.
It could be a modern day CYA situation in case there's a lawsuit, in case there's an insurance claim, in case something bad happens. But to focus back in on the access to the data, let's use this building as an example. When you get hired here on at this company, you get a key fob.
Right.
That key fob accesses certain doors that are pertinent to your use of the building. As a promotions person, when I first started here, I had access to the entire building. Now, I don't. There are certain doors that my key fob works on and certain doors that my key fob does not. In this situation, for this physical therapist, his key fob, for whatever reason, was open to every single door, and he took advantage of it.
Because I want to remind everybody, according to the hospital and the health clinic, this physical therapist never, ever had an affiliation with Lawrence Memorial Hospital or its plastic surgery clinic. And Sam, for this portal system, does that portal system include 50,000 different health centers around the country? Or is it just specifically a Lawrence portal system? You know where I'm going here. This physical therapist may not even be anywhere in our region whatsoever.
That's a fair point. Yeah, I don't know.
And how did this woman, I'm not questioning the validity of it, how did she know that he accessed her pictures, typed her in by keystroke, got her date of birth, driver's license, which, by the way, why that is pertinent to your medical records, I have no idea. Clinical notes, of course, we can understand that. How does she know that he, we're assuming it's a he, had access to all of this stuff?
There were two pathways to that. Either she caught wind that he had access to these photos, or the system did what it was supposed to do after the fact.
And flagged it.
And flagged it because he was not supposed to have access to those files.
I would guess at this point that has happened because they know there are 425 women.
913-586-7798. 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. So we're talking about this lawsuit against the University of Kansas Health System where two unnamed patients allege that a physical therapist who was employed by KU Health accessed patient files to the tune of 425 people, mostly women, we believe, that showed not only their address, the clinical records, driver's license, date of birth, everything, name, but also photographs. Most of them were pre- and post-breast augmentation. Telephone number here is 913-586-7798.
Which, was he not hugged enough as a child or too much? There's something going on there that would be, you know, you have a cell phone, dude.
There are websites.
Trillion different ways you can find anything you want out there without, he's going to prison for this. You do realize that.
Probably, yeah.
This is prison.
Well, this is only a lawsuit. There are no criminal charges yet.
Oh, there will be.
Maybe.
This is a grotesque violation of privacy. And regulatory systems will also step in. This person will never work again.
You ask, you know, about the websites and stuff. This isn't about seeing somebody naked. It's much deeper, more perverse than that.
Yeah.
This is about control.
Yeah.
It's about taking advantage of someone and violating them. We said the same thing about the guy in the gym down in southern Missouri who was taking videos of women coming out of the tanning bed.
Yep. I mean, this is really simple. This is a much deeper mental health problem than just I need to see a bunch of naked people. You could do that on any website on the internet. Again, to repeat myself, this is about seeking control, exploitation. I see pictures of you and you don't know it.
Okay, yes, but.
Okay.
Here's a yes, but. This is where the hospital and the university are in hot water. Okay. The lawsuit claims that the unnamed physical therapist had been breaching patient private medical data using his KU health credentials for more than 2 years before he was caught.
So he was a resident PT.
I don't know, Sam. If they said he was not affiliated with the hospital or the health system, the lawsuit says he was using his KU health credentials, whatever that means.
Well, it means he works for KU Health.
Earlier in the story, it said he did not have any affiliation with either system. So there's a discrepancy in the reporting there. But how does this go on for 2 years? And that's why the portal is also being sued, because there should be a red flag system in place. To Sam's point, let's say he worked there for 6 months and then no longer worked there. Did they not change his key fob, for lack of a better analogy, but it was a good one, Sam, to block or bar access in an area clearly he had nothing to do with and no business accessing?
I don't see in the story where it says he wasn't affiliated with KU. I see where he was not affiliated with Lawrence Memorial. KU Health informed the plaintiff that the physical therapist, who was never identified by name, had screenshot the women's driver's license. This is the one who filed the one of the two women who filed the lawsuit. The physical therapist never provided treatment to the women and never had an affiliation with Lawrence Memorial, according to the lawsuit, which, let's assume it's a he. How did he get access to Lawrence Memorial if he has no affiliation with Lawrence Memorial whatsoever? That's a problem.
I don't know how this is not a criminal act. And I don't know what that crime would be. And if you're an attorney, please help us with this. It's much more than invasion of privacy.
This is not, and
I'm not diminishing the upskirt photo in the grocery store.
Computer fraud?
It's got to be some sort of federal violation, would it not be?
Not necessarily. Not if he or she, and we're assuming it's a he, was accessing it inside of the state of Kansas, that would be a state crime.
I thought if you used the internet, it became federal.
2 months after discovering the breach, KU Health sent letters to affected patients about the breach. However, according to the lawsuit, they failed to provide non-contradictory information, the name of the physical therapist, how many were impacted, what private information was accessed, and whether the physical therapist made copies of the data or simply viewed it.
Alex and KCK, good afternoon. Hello.
Hey, guys. It's been a while talking to you guys specifically, but you guys go through the annual training for computer security and stuff like that.
Yeah.
More than we'd like.
You're right. So do you remember hearing about social engineering?
Mm-mm.
At all?
Mm-mm.
All right. I think it's, so anyways, what I'm getting at is he might not have had affiliation with either of those systems, but because he's at KU, he might have been given a KU credential email address. So whatever his name is at KUMed.com,
right,
or
right,
whatever. So through social engineering, I know for a fact I can get access to systems I'm not supposed to. I'm just graduated bachelor's in IT, and I got a whole bunch of other stuff, work for the Army, intelligence. Anyway, so I know I can do it by exploiting a person and saying, hey, I'm supposed to have access to this. I'm a physical therapist working at KU, and because of that KU domain, Joe Schmo in the back room doesn't really know and grants access, and all of a sudden they've got access to stuff they're not supposed to.
So we are naive and wrong, Alex, then, in thinking because of the portal system and the way that health information is stored, that we are going to be safe from a data breach in the way that we always get these texts and emails from our banks. I mean, that's what this says to me, that not only are we safe or not protected from a data breach like this, this went on 2 years and no one noticed it.
But this was internal, not external. He was getting access from the inside.
But if you are a patient affected, do you care?
No, you don't care.
Let me just throw this into the mix. What if there's an angry, scorned ex-spouse out there that works for some health clinic? You know what I'm, you know where I'm going with this?
Yeah, sure, of course.
Because he is accused of specifically typing in one of the victim's names. Like he saw her on campus, thought she was cute, typed in her name.
But how did he get the name? Did he know her?
He probably knew her, Scott.
913-586-7798-586.
Man, I'd like to see her surgery photos. That would really get me going.
77.
Weirdo!
You're on Dana and Parks. Okay. Great point from the text line. So far, only two patients have filed a lawsuit. Where are the other 423?
It's coming.
Oh, they're coming.
It's coming.
They're coming. This will be a class action. Stephen in Olathe. Stephen, good afternoon. Hello.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So my question is, why does a hospital need my driver's license number? Why does a hospital need my social security number? I can understand why it is that they need my face if I'm going in for surgery. But, you know, the thing with all these places is that my privacy is only good as their security. And apparently they don't care about my security at all.
Stephen, I thought about this during the break, and you bring up a really good point. But my guess would be part of the reason why they might need your driver's license is to confirm that the patient that they're actually supposed to see is really standing in front of them.
Stephen, it's fraud, and let me tell you why. There have been very high-profile, some funny, some not funny cases where someone steals a woman's identity and goes in and gets that surgery done, and it's fraud. It wasn't her. She used someone else's credentials to get that surgery, and it's not like you can go back in and remove those, if you know what I mean. And so I think
my next point is that my brother works for a large insurance company, and he does login security.
Okay.
And you know, it has to make sense. People who just come in as a contractor or new hires, they don't get access to all of these systems. It has to make sense for them to have access to this part of the system. They don't just, you know, give them a key code and let them in willy-nilly to all parts of the security. It just sounds like this hospital has no security at all, and anyone can get into parts where they should or should not be. And that's a huge problem. And I hope that they get sued into the point where they are taking security not so lightly.
Well, this is a wake-up call for all of the hospitals and health systems. Yeah, sure. And we were talking about this, you guys, during the break. If he had access as a physical therapist to all of the breast augmentation photos of, let's say, 425 women, what's not to say he could not have also accessed mental health records, cancer.
Probably could have.
You know, it just doesn't make sense that a physical therapist would have blanket access to plastic surgery files. And so from there, you would have to ask, and if I was one of these women, I would certainly want to know, what other files did he have access to? Because physical therapy and breast augmentation do not go together.
You just took my point away from me. Why would a physical therapist need access to the pictures of breast augmentation?
Let alone 425 of them.
We did have a couple of callers that couldn't hang on the line, both of which said they had received breast augmentations, said that the before and after pictures were commonplace, and both said that they were offered physical therapy immediately after surgery.
For what
purpose?
Learning to live with your new
enhancements.
Sure.
I will tell you that was not my experience, but it still does not mean a physical therapist should have access to those records.
Let's go to Nathan in Blue Springs. Nathan, good afternoon. Hello.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. Hey, so I work in healthcare, and just a couple of points. So HIPAA, all that jazz, that's kind of my alley. So
yeah.
As far as the relationship between KU and LMH, a lot of the hospitals are kind of out of the metro area, especially the freestanding ones. They will have relationships with larger facilities here in the metro. So likely what is going on is that KU is on Epic Systems, which is one form of medical health record. LMH is probably also sharing a system with them. So their patient's information is getting entered into a system that you would reasonably have access to from KU. So in the case of physical therapist, he I don't know why he's accessing their information. Anywhere else I've ever worked, if you start accessing a bunch of charts like that, someone's going to ask you questions. They're going to know why you're accessing all those charts. You have one of the rules under HIPAA regulations is a need to know. He doesn't need to know about 425 people.
So why wasn't it caught sooner?
That's the thing, Nathan, for 2 years, that's crazy.
Yes, it is. And I have no explanations for you because I'm wondering the same thing. I'm not a victim, but holy crap, y'all.
Okay. So can you help explain, because you work with this system, is Epic Systems sort of like Cerner was, where they are the catch-all for all things medical records?
Like the digital medical records?
One of them. They are one of the various vendors that exist for electronic health records. So KU uses one thing, St. Luke's happens to use, whatever, and then the HCA hospitals will have another. It's just whoever the health system happens to have a contract with, and they might change every 10 years or something. But yes, Epic is one of the options that you have out there for electronic health records.
But if somebody within the system is accessing records that they probably shouldn't be accessing.
In a different department, say.
Yeah. How many normally, because 425 seems excessive. I think we already talked about that. Yeah. How many normally would it be before somebody gets flagged?
I don't know. It probably depends on what the rules they have set up. I know in some places I've worked, you have to justify it by patient if they are not tied to you in some way. So if they don't have an appointment scheduled with you or with your provider that you're working for, you have to justify why you're accessing them. And those requests get reviewed.
And who reviews that, Nathan?
That would be your information security people. And every health system in America has someone working in information security, and it's a big deal. They have to uphold federal regulations on privacy and healthcare information. And so if that's what there's a lot of lines that have been crossed by having access to information like this.
Because I brought up the point earlier, Nathan, that if you have an angry ex-spouse that wants to key in their ex-wife's or ex-husband's name, or let's say you're a stalker, let's say you actually have some domestic violence in your past, and you meet a girl at a bar and you have access to this database and you want to key her name in and look up her private medical records. Like it's
But how would
shocking.
You know that she had been to that
but
hospital?
It's shocking. This guy did a keyword search. It's shocking to me that I think we all just assume that would be flagged. And for whatever reason, in this case, it was not.
Amy in Kansas City. Amy, hello. You get the last word.
Oh, perfect. So I wanted to back on what the guy who just called was saying. And I work in healthcare. I work in an emergency room. And in the emergency room, we can see that it's called a health information exchange. And it allows me to access, if I need to, like the patient I'm working with, to access and see what other hospitals they've been to.
Okay.
One of the reasons they do that is to check for drug seekers.
Yep.
So I don't, and so like I can, we're on Cerner, but I can access St. Luke's. Sometimes it's not a full report, but I can access other systems. But the hospitals have to be on the information exchange, and then patients can opt out of the information exchange.
Well, if you can opt out of the information exchange, if you're a pill seeker, wouldn't you just do that?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It happens all the time.
Hang on, Amy. How do you actually catch a pill seeker if they know, I'm sure they all know, they have the option to opt out?
There's another way to do it is you can check pharmacy. There's a way, because I have nothing to do with the pharmacy part, but when you do prescriptions, then at the pharmacy, it'll flag it. So there's a couple of redundancies.
Because that's an appropriate use of the health information exchange system. I think most people would agree. Yeah. We don't want people bouncing around hospital to hospital looking for drugs.
But it's ineffective if they have the right to opt out of it.
Yes, but there's another fail-safe.
But there's another fail-safe in the pharmacy. If they go to a pharmacy, they could say, oh, no, we can't fill this because you just had a 30-day script filled 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But aren't a lot of pill seekers just going to the ER?
Yes.
And getting it there?
But they don't. Most ERs don't give more than they won't give a 30-day script anymore.
Right, they're on to that game.
You can tell because they're allergic to Dilaudid or they're allergic to the pain pills that don't work, the medications that don't work for them anymore. They're allergic, and I'm doing that in air quotes. They're allergic to it. And so there's a lot of, I mean, you can tell, you know, there's, because if someone's truly in pain, their blood pressure is going to be higher. So there's also physical ways you can tell.
Interesting. Amy, thank you for the call.
But like,
go ahead.
You're welcome.
No, finish your point. Please finish your point.
I work in mental health, so it allows me to see if they've been hospitalized recently and didn't tell us, because a lot of times people are wanting to be hospitalized for mental health for secondary gain because they have no place to stay. That's a whole other issue.
Amy,
but I can see if they recently got discharged.
Thank you for the call. All right, 913-586-7798. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott Parks here on KMBZ. So apparently people were getting hit by baseballs a lot yesterday. Veteran umpire Hunter Wendelstedt went to the hospital yesterday after he was struck in the face behind first base by a line drive foul ball in Minnesota. Crew chief Todd Titchener, who called home plate during the 4-3 victory by the Twins, who cares, told a pool reporter after the game that Wendelstedt was coherent and speaking, but was clearly going through concussion protocol.
Okay, was anyone else watching the Royals game last night? And HUD and Ryan were in the booth with, Hosmer stopped by.
Oh, really?
For about an hour and just chatted with them as they were calling the game. It was very entertaining.
Huh.
And they're all three sitting there calling the game, and one of our runners on first base tries to steal second. And Scott, their catcher, stands up to throw him out at second, and instead of throwing the ball low toward the bag where you would tag the runner, he throws it higher, and our runner gets jacked in the face. It was one of those tags, and was called out, that instead of just tagging him low, the ball was high, and the second baseman just jacks our runner in the face. Our runner was called out, and there was some discussion about, like,
Sam, will you look that up? If a player gets hit by a ball,
well, it was,
are they out?
No, it was
he caught
second
it.
Baseman caught it and then just jacked our guy in the face.
Got it. Okay.
And they reviewed it and still called our runner out. And I said to Johnny, you can't just jack a player in the face.
You touch him anywhere on the body you want.
The rules state, the rules state that a runner can technically be tagged out in the face. It is not recommended nor common practice. Thank you, rule book.
Now, I know that, well, I don't know this, but I believe that a runner, if a runner is hit by a batted ball, they're out. So if I'm on first base and I'm, and the ball is
hit. Oh, I thought it was a dead ball.
I don't believe that's right.
Now, they can't throw it at you to tag you out,
right? But I think if you get hit by a batted, you're a base runner, and you get hit by a batted ball, I believe you're out.
No.
Yes.
No, this isn't dodgeball.
Well, it is if it's the ball from your own teammate's bat.
Yes, the runner is out if hit by a fair batted ball in fair territory before the ball touches
The opponent's glove.
Correct.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that.
By the way, tagging someone in the face is considered a malicious tag.
Is there any other way to consider it?
No.
That's just what the rule book calls it.
Malicious?
A malicious tag.
Well, it's not very nice.
Now, it could result in a warning or an ejection if it happens more than once. Kind of like that guy in Virginia who was elbowing people on the court.
He's been charged.
Did we ever talk about that?
I don't think we did.
I think we mentioned it
in passing. There
felony
is,
charges,
he's
right?
He's an 18-year-old high school basketball player who was a little aggressive in a basketball game the other night. And he has been charged with three, I believe, felonies.
The bows were flying.
And they were hitting people in the face. He even broke an opponent's nose.
I do want to bring that back for
We always talk about
discussion.
Between the whistles, is that assault?
I do. I want to bring that back for discussion because, I want to see exactly what it was he did.
Because
we're going to start charging everybody for a thrown elbow, we're going to need to build more juvenile detention space.
I will say that the particular final elbow that the video shows looked very intentional.
Okay,
and
well,
very aggressive.
Well, then what about if on the basketball court, and I watch, you know, Facebook Reels, and apparently my algorithm includes NBA fights, and I've seen plenty of people punch the crap out of somebody.
Yeah.
In an NBA game.
That's the question,
right?
Do you
go to jail for that? I mean, let's start patrolling every NHL game.
No, I think you swing a helmet on a football field, yes.
Garrett Miles?
Yes, we've seen that.
Or Miles Garrett?
And he was not charged.
He was not.
Yeah, should have been. Garrett. Should have been. Should have been.
The target there.
That is correct. The second string quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers at the time. Quick break for the news. Dan Weinbaum has that coming your way in 2 minutes. Dana Wright, Sam Stevie III. My name is Scott. Here on KMBZ, we will see you on the other side.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.